Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, and welcome to this latest issue of Bodcast, where I'm joined by Simon Thackeray, and we're going to be talking around the issue of complaints and litigation and the GDC and how it affects both NHS dentists and to a certain extent private dentists as well. Simon, thank you very much for joining me. I wonder if you could just introduce yourself.
Thank you for asking me. Simon Thackeray, I am a private dentist in Mansfield, Nottinghamshire, with a little bit of an NHS commitment for children. Qualified in 91, went private about 2004. I do quite a bit of medical legal work and litigation-based stuff these days, as well as my wet-fingered, but I'm still primarily a dentist.
Okay, thanks. So I think it's on the basis of that medico-legal work that you do that we wanted to have a quick chat. And I'm going to start, if I may, by referring to the latest Practice Plan NHS Confidence Monitor and some of the results, which would seem to suggest that NHS dentists in particular are feeling the pressure when it comes to the fear of complaints and litigation. What are your thoughts around how justified their level of anxiety is about that?
Well, I think if you've got 95% are anxious, you would say there's no justification to feel that scared in a profession. But they obviously are. These are people who are highly trained, caring professionals, and are trying to do the best for the patients. When you then turn around and have the vast majority who are scared stiff of doing something for various reasons, that's just wrong. Absolutely wrong. Multifactorial. We've got the GDC, who in the past have been lacking in the ability to respond appropriately, and they've used almost a scattergun approach. But you know, you've also got the fact that litigation is on an upward slope, despite things to change, no win, no fee, and it's almost like it's a perfect storm of, well, disaster that people seem to feel that they're in.
And so that you mentioned then that they feel that they're in. From your work and your experience, and you have kind of alluded to this with the comment about the fact that the amount of litigation is going up, is that anxiety justified then? Are they right to be?
Lawyers are aggressive. Lawyers, by virtue of the fact that we have an adversarial-based legal system, the aim is to win a case, and everything will be put at that. And you will find an error in virtually everything. When you look at clinical notes, you look at the way things are documented, it's almost impossible to obey the rules all of the time. And that needs to change a little bit, because a lot of the things are not wrong. They just haven't been written down, or they've not been written down correctly. And of course, that is then jumped on. It leaves a gap that somebody can utilise. The solicitors will jump straight in there. There may be a consent issue, the new situation with the Montgomery case that changes material risk assessment. Makes it almost like you're jumping through an ever-increasing number of hoops, most of which are on fire, and you haven't got the time to do it. And I say that as a private practitioner as well. I struggle with some of the consent issues just to have the time to discuss things. So how a time constraint of the NHS works with some of the practitioners, goodness only knows how they manage even to say hello to some of the patients.
Well, that was actually one of the areas I was going to ask for your view on, because I think it was the Federation of London LDCs back in 2015 had an exchange of letters with the GDC. Where one of the phrases that stuck out in my mind was, how can we expect, or words to this effect anyway, how can we expect to achieve the gold standards of the regulator for the tin-plated budget given by the NHS?
Absolutely. I mean, has the GDC answered that question? The problem with the GDC, I suppose, is the fact that it regulates us as individuals. Now, as individuals, we then choose to work within whatever kind of system to provide dentistry, be that private or be that on the NHS. You should never blame a person when it is a system that is at fault. I mean, that's a, excuse me, that's a almost as like a business mantra. Don't blame the person, blame the system. You go to EasyJet, something's gone wrong. It's because they're working to a prescribed method of dealing with their customers. The person themselves may not want to deal with it that way. And unfortunately, when you've got an NHS system that constrains certain things, people work within that. Now, the GDC will turn around and say, you shouldn't. You are a dentist, first and foremost. You are not an NHS dentist. You are a dentist. And these have certain standards that you have to obey. But the system makes it virtually impossible to do that. Tin-plated budget, I wouldn't have said it's as expensive as tin plating. Yeah. It is virtually impossible to make the two sides, you know, square up. So what's going to happen with the demographic of some NHS practices? Some of the patients, and be careful what I say, but some of the patients are of the it's somebody else's fault kind of era. Or demographic, whatever you want to call it, and they will quite happily sue. And you will find a gap in those notes or in something there because it is impossible to comply. And the GDC will jump on that.
Well, one of the things I heard at the briefing that the CDO gave in June of this year was a comment from one of the GDC representatives that was on a Q&A panel that actually the fitness to practice panels would look sympathetically at an NHS dentist that didn't have enough time to complete records adequately. What's your take on that?
I'd like to see that written down. Because if it's not written down, it didn't happen. And, you know, that's often the mantra that is used. I think that's a sensible and pragmatic way of looking at things. But, of course, then you bring into a sort of the situation that if that's okay for an NHS practice that hasn't got enough time, what if it happens in a private practice where because of a time pressure, you've got an emergency? Time is valuable to all of us, and it is often very difficult to find the exact amount of time that you need for a procedure. That creates stress. We can see from the confidence monitor and things that have been published in the past, there's an increase in stress in dentistry anyway. Should the GDC then, and this is the other side of the argument, should the GDC then look at the NHS as being a special case? And if it's a special case, then that goes against the private practitioners who wouldn't then be dealt with in the same way. So it's discriminatory. But I can see it. For me, the GDC should actually turn around themselves and start to criticise the NHS system. Until they do that, the BDA and people who are saying that the system is failing are probably banging their heads against a brick wall. It's not the remit of the GDC to do that, but it is the remit of the GDC to protect the public. And if there's a system in place that we're showing isn't protecting the public, why can't they say something about that?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, actually, that as you've said, that if they're there to protect the public, and you've got inappropriate incentives within a system, disincentives to in terms of time for record keeping and things, then actually, yeah, maybe that is something they should have a view on. Mm. That comment that I heard at the CDO briefing, you described as sounding pragmatic. I wondered whether or not that was a sign of things changing at the GDC, whether there's a slight softening of attitude. Have you got any thoughts on that?
The GDC are listening for the first time. The new better regulation or the whatever they call it, shift in the balance, there's definitely a desire, if you like, to move forward and try and get back into not the profession's good books, because it's not supposed to be in the profession's good books, but to try and reconnect with a profession that has lost confidence in it. As with all these things, leadership has to then trickle down to the frontline troops. And the frontline troops at the GDC, they've got to make sure that people like Jonathan Green and Matthew Hill are getting their message and their need to adapt down to their teams as well. The things like the expert witness, the people who work with expert witnesses, it's got to come down to everybody who takes some work from the GDC, because otherwise you're going to have, yes, it was a very good idea. It's a bit like PPI. PPI, when the boards were discussing PPI, very good idea. Who wouldn't want to protect against redundancy? Okay, when it filters down then into the frontline troops, it's you've got to sell this. The message gets broken up. Now, the message has got to go through the entire organisation of the GDC. It's not just the top level. And I think it needs a complete change of high-level management, and that includes the chairman. I think we need to have a registrant in charge, because until they understand the absolute unique pressures that an individual is going under at any time, then they will always look at it in a different manner.
So I know you referred to the chairman then, but you've also mentioned Matthew Hill and Jonathan Green reasonably positively. So it feels like actually there's some change in attitudes amongst some of the leadership team there that sound good. But you were saying before that it's a question of how it filters all the way down and you get that cultural change, which I guess is going to take time.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, what do you think your fellow professionals should be doing to help minimise the risk? Given some of the cases that you've been involved in, some of the things you've seen, are there any kind of pitfalls or good examples of best practice?
We could talk about this for about another 10 hours. There are still notes that are written up badly. There are still gaps where conversations are not recorded appropriately in the notes. Now, just because it's not recorded in the notes doesn't mean to say it didn't happen. And there is always going to be the my word against yours with regard to patient. You've got to protect yourself massively when writing things up. You've got to have a justification why you have moved away from a recommendation or a guideline. And it's got to be documented appropriately. But if you over-document it, then there is the argument that people will say, well, that's just cut and paste notes. I can spot cut and paste notes. You see them because the whole thing in a patient record, the same conversation was had all on every single visit with the patient every single time, when it obviously wasn't. So we've got to protect ourselves by having the most appropriate conversation with the patient recorded in the most appropriate manner, and that will give us some protection. But the main thing is build up rapport with the patients, because if you don't build up rapport with the patients, they don't like you. Or the people who like you don't tend to sue you. You can drop the ball. You can't drop it very far, and you can't drop it too many times. But if you have got rapport, they will let you not get away with it, but there is a degree of flexibility in the way that the patient will react. And it might not be to go straight to the GDC, and it might not be to go straight to the solicitors.
Yeah,
it might come to you first. And that's what the GDC are wanting. But they've got to have the report. You've got to have the report.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I completely agree with you there that actually it's right for everyone to be talking about local resolution as the first step. Absolutely. But that's unlikely to happen if there's been, well, if there's no relationship, or if that relationship has broken down. So
that's it.
So I agree. And I've heard Kevin Lewis say many times that point about patients don't sue dentists that they like. And also talk about the fact that something like 60-70% of the complaints that they saw at Dental Protection when he was there were originating in breakdowns in communication, not problems clinically. So
I see it all the time. One of the issues, I mean, this is on a separate subject. When you get information from a solicitor, and particularly from the GDC, one of the first things that you read is a transcript of what the patient has said and what they feel. Now, there's a whole issue there about how that can bias a witness. But in reality, when you read it and you break it down and you look at what's being said, nine times out of ten, there's a break in communication. Somebody's done something, not said what they were going to do or why they were going to do it, and then something's gone wrong. compounded by the fact that they then don't apologise, they don't admit to it, and whatever. And in a lot of cases, all the patient wants is acknowledgement. And how are you going to sort it out for me?
You mentioned then about the things that you've seen, and I guess it's probably my final question really is, as you've moved slightly away from the clinical dentistry more into the medico-legal side, have you been surprised by anything, shocked by anything, or is it pretty much what you thought it would be?
I've been surprised by a lot of things, obviously things that I can't discuss, but if I ever write a book of memoirs, there are going to be some highly hilarious things in there. I think I've been disappointed in a lot of cases that I thought that generally our profession was better at writing notes up. Now, possibly this is because I'm seeing those cases that have got the errors, and the people who've written cases up appropriately have probably got the rapport with the patient and have probably got good notes, and it's never got any further. So it may well be a skewed section of the profession. Some of the things that patients go for with regards, you know, the litigation things are not things you can ever mitigate against, because it is down to communication. It is down to my word against yours, and there's no way you record every single bit of every single conversation. And if it's based on that, the big thing that I'm seeing at the moment, and the thing that solicitors are particularly getting hot on, is Montgomery and material risk. And I think we're going to see vicarious liability of principals and maybe heads of corporates creep into some of the cases. And that will be interesting, because I've dealt with one case that's got vicarious liability in it, but that's not within my remit, that's not within my sphere of expertise. But yeah, there are some things, but fundamentally, it's not that surprising. Something went wrong, somebody didn't apologise, somebody didn't explain it, and there may or may not have been something happen, but at some point, the patient has decided to go and complain, and it's not been managed.
Well, I mean, that sounds like the key to what you're saying is that actually, yeah, we've got rising litigation. Mm. We've got, I guess, ways of investigating complaints that aren't ideal at the moment.
Yeah.
But that actually you can sort of mitigate that risk to an extent yourself if you focus on the notes, you focus on the relationship building and the communication with the patient.
Yeah.
And hopefully, over time, we start to see some glimmerings of hope from what you're saying about the GDC, although it needs to go an awful lot further. But actually, maybe there's a turning of the corner there.
I think there is. I think they've realised that they got it wrong. Okay. But it'll be a long time before legislation changes it formally.
Okay. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time, Simon. Really appreciated talking to you today.
Thank you.